The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
World Cup Football Daily. After Tuesday's Uruguay-Italy with its outcome of Uruguayans 8-1, a more restrained Wednesday, but still there was Argentina-Nigeria with its Messi-Musa massive missile matchup and three other matches. Iran-Bosnia-Herzegovina, Ecuador-France and Honduras-Switzerland. Enter Shaqiri, Shaqiri liaison, and so on as the Swiss roll on to the last 16. Thursday brings the last two groups and the question, USA-Germany, will it be Biscotto? How will the cookie crumble in Recife? We'll be asking a top German in today's World Cup Football Daily. Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Etc. and so on. And it's a big welcome back to Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. And on this moonlit evening, how are we finding you?
Passed out on a sun lounger.
Brilliant. Brilliant. James Horncastle.
Making a sandcastle.
The tide's going to do for that one, but brave effort all the same. Yeah. And, amazing atmosphere there at the Beira Rio. There was talk of 100,000... Argentine fans being there really for the match, and they were certainly rewarded by a bit of a stormer. 3-2 it finished to Messi and company, with Messi very much in evidence with two of Argentina's three goals. He and Musa, of course, doing similar work for Nigeria.
Yeah, Musa was a surprise. I think he took both of his goals really well. I think there was some encouraging things for Nigeria to take into their knockout game again. Enyema, he conceded three goals in the afternoon, but those were the first ones he'd conceded all tournament. He won't be playing, or his defence won't be playing against Messi every round, and I think that's one of the things that's stands Nigeria in good stead. They do seem to have some solidity in defensive positions. And Emenike, while he perhaps hasn't scored as many goals as people expected, is the sort of work he puts in for the team is good. Yeah, I mean he was influential in stages of play today.
Scary sight the supporters made, the Argentina fans bouncing up and down en masse at various points of the game, and they really got a huge push behind them this side, and with Messi building and growing game by game by the looks of things, they look quite the opponents.
Every Argentina game does seem like a home game. I mean, you can say that about all the other South Americans that have participated, but at the same time you do hear nothing but these the Barra Bravas kind of singing all the time, and there's been a lot of coverage of some of their chants being among the best at the tournament so far, sort of mocking Brazil and all that sort of thing. But they are they're an invading force.
Mm. Did you catch this game, Barry?
I was sort of watching both at the same time, so I managed to take in neither, really. Of watching two games at the same time.
Did you catch the glorious moment where Lavezzi went over to have a chat with Sabella?
Yeah. That was quite amusing. He squirted him with the contents of his water bottle.
Mm. After pointedly ignoring his remarks.
And his manager didn't seem to mind, particularly.
Well, it's interesting because one of the technical staff there is watching this, not sure whether to laugh or not, as Lavezzi first ignores the manager and then just out of the corner of his eye gives him a quick squirt off the water bottle. But then there's a slight grin and Lavezzi begins to turn to Sabella, and I wonder if it does actually just suggest a very relaxed attitude between the manager and players. Either that or total breakdown in respect to the Argentine argument. I'm not sure.
I mean, that was the case, I guess, with Maradona, wasn't it? Well, certainly at club level at Napoli, he was seen to call the shots, be it the tactics or who they signed. And, you know, after that first game, which Argentina opened with against Bosnia, and they played 3-5-2, and then they changed it back to the 4-3-3 that they'd used in qualifying at half-time. That was seen as, you know, Messi pulling his influence in the dressing room. But whether that's true or not remains to be seen, I'm sure.
Do you think the toughest team to manage at this World Cup? With some of the figures there, Lavezzi doesn't strike you as the most necessarily easygoing of characters. Messi, we hear a lot about how he may or may not operate within the team, and supposedly Tevez not part of the picture as a means to assuaging Messi's demands.
It's difficult to know who's the toughest.
But let's wildly speculate, though.
I would widely speculate that perhaps Ghana are the hardest team to manage, because they have a big airplane full of cash coming over to keep them.
So, yeah, tell us the details on that story, Barry.
Well, any thieves or airplane hijackers who are listening may be interested to know that there is a plane containing up to $3.5 million in cash on its way from Accra to Brasilia.
Mm-hmm.
And the money is to pay. It's from the Ghanaian president who is paying the players their bonuses. They've threatened to go on strike unless they get bonuses they were promised paid in cash tomorrow before kickoff, their game against Portugal.
Right.
So the Ghanaian president, John Mahama, has sent, I think it's either between $1.7 million and $2.3 million on this private plane.
What time is the plane scheduled to land?
I don't know exactly.
I'm envisaging a fleet of kind of armoured jeeps. Desperately trying to tear through Rio, but there's a traffic jam and all sorts of hijinks.
I just think I could see Bane from Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of hijacking that flight ball.
Right.
But anyway, maybe a
clifftop road on the way to the stadium, and they take it a little bit hastily, and the back wheels swing out, and oh, my word.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry about that.
I mean, at their press conference today is supposed to be an hilarious article. One of the players was asked, like, well, when you get this money, what are you going to do with it? And they said, oh, we'll just put it in our bags and lock them.
Surely when they get to customs, I mean, what do they not have to declare? Or?
Well, I'm not sure whether FIFA rules might exempt players and members of the whole kind of travelling World Cup circus from any kind of customs business.
Well, FIFA would surely frown upon people walking around at their tournament carrying large bags of cash.
Mm, that's their job.
Yes. This is true, because it's appearance fees that FIFA are meant to pay them, but they pay them after the tournament, and the Ghanaians want it now. Mm. So, yeah, basically the
Teams get $8 million just for participating in the tournament.
Each.
So if you qualify for the World Cup and go out in the group stage, you get $8 million from FIFA. And before the tournament starts, you get like $1.2 million walking around money just to help you prepare and get there. So the Ghanaian players obviously don't trust their federation to pay them. And they were offered the option of being paid by bank transfer, you know, money into their accounts. And they said, no, we want the cash.
Right. Good on you, Ghana. All right. Awful scenes, meanwhile, for the poor Nigerian fellow who got the broken... Babatumbi, is it? Who got the broken arm?
Yeah.
Wow. How did that happen?
A shot from his teammate, Ogieni Anatsi, just really leathered it. And poor Babatumbi was holding his arm out, and it just seemed to snap it.
Glad we can't show the pictures, because it was really, really... Have you not seen this, Barry?
No.
His arm, basically, it just snaps like a twig and goes... the one half of it goes flailing around. From
I was aware he was taken off with an arm injury. I didn't realise it was so bad.
Barely attached to the rest of his body anymore.
Good thing the goalkeeper didn't get to it.
Well, yeah. Famously, Gigi Riva, Il Rombo di Tuono, the Rumble of Thunder, broke a poor young boy's arm with a wayward shot towards goal in Sardinia. But I always thought that was extraordinary and perhaps a little bit apocryphal, but clearly these things do happen. Anyway, well, Barry, do tell us a little bit, which is probably all you can tell us, about Bosnia-Herzegovina and their game against Iran.
They won it comfortably, and it was nice to see them go out with a win, because I think they've been desperately unlucky in this tournament, and they probably should have gone through and qualified for the second round. There's no doubt in my mind that they're a better team than Nigeria, and the more inferior team has progressed, in my opinion. They've been the victim of some bad decisions, and I think they were desperately unlucky to be beaten by Nigeria, and they could conceivably have got a draw against Argentina as well. So they won convincingly today, and it doesn't really matter because they're out anyway.
All right then. Argentina will be playing Switzerland, and Nigeria, not Bosnia-Herzegovina, will be taking on France. France, who'd been absolutely flying. What was the statistic we mentioned yesterday? I think it was 16 goals in the last three games, but only, well, actually none whatsoever in their Wednesday night clash with Ecuador, a game which saw Didier Deschamps fielding a very revised French side. Philippe Auclair was watching this and joins us now.
Je suis ici avec toi, Jimbo.
Ah, oh, good. All right, excellent. Full speed ahead then, listeners. What did you make of France tonight? Disappointing, or was this just Didier Deschamps making the right managerial choices to keep people fresh for the real games?
Bit of both. Mm-hmm. Disappointment in as much there were so many chances and there was certainly a lack of sharpness in front of goal. Disappointed by some individual performances. There were players that I was expecting more from.
Disappointed you?
I think Karim Benzema had not the best of games, really. Sissoko either wasn't really... let's put it that way. You would have thought that as he's going to be in competition with Mathieu Valbuena for a place in the starting lineup of France in the round of 16 against Nigeria, you would have thought he would perhaps provide a little bit more, and he didn't. He seemed actually to be hurried, and it was not the best Moussa Sissoko I've ever seen. Otherwise, Pogba was quite transparent and surprisingly so. Didn't take the right decisions. There were quite a few individual performances which were below par.
Right.
Well, but there were also some satisfactions. I thought Koscielny actually had a decent game, and that Morgan Schneiderlin was very, very, very good, actually, indeed, in that role as what we call la sentinelle, the sentinel in front of the back four.
Right.
Even if people in France have a slightly different opinion from mine. Maybe I'm a little bit biased towards him.
Okay, but you called him Schneiderlin there. How do you normally call him? Ah, thank you. Right, six changes that Didier Deschamps made. Yeah. Kabay was suspended. Evra Varane, Giroud, Valbuena, Debuchy were on the bench. Yeah. Ian Burnett, among the many commenting on the difference to the French side with Kabay out, he says, Newcastle post-January France tonight, just how good is Kabay?
That's correct, up to a point. I think it's simplifying a little bit. I don't think Yohan Kabay is necessarily the player who makes France tick all of the time. I can appreciate the fact that he's got this capacity when he's put in that position in front of the back four with two very dynamic midfielders like Matuidi and Pogba. Well, normally dynamic, because Pogba wasn't tonight. I can understand why you would say that of Yohan Kabay, that Schneiderlin, is perhaps not, doesn't quite have the same influence over the game in general. He's not the same kind of player. And yes, we missed him. But I think more than anything, France knew that they were basically in the last 16 tonight.
Right.
And that there was a lack of motivation throughout the team. There was a lack of sharpness. You could see that people were also thinking, if I go into a challenge, am I going to go full for it? Or am I going to think about what might happen to me? We are in the round of 16. We knew that before the game. And that explains in some ways what happened. But also, I mean, the lack of sharpness in front of goal was perhaps the most, I wouldn't say worrying thing, but one of the things that Didier Deschamps will no doubt think about and reflect on and comment.
Philippe, what did you make of Ecuador? I was very bewildered by the way they went about their job. I mean, they seemed happy enough with the draw, even though it meant they went out. I mean, to begin with, they needed to equal Switzerland's result, and then it got to the stage Switzerland was so far ahead they needed to score two goals, and yet didn't bring on a second striker till the 90th minute.
Well, I think it's a little bit harsh on them, or maybe it's just me again, but I thought they actually did fight until the very end, and they seemed to have some belief until the very end. And they've played with a particular system. Why should they change the system, which has brought them to the World Cup, just because of a match situation, and they're not actually prepared for that? I mean, does that make sense? We all know that the limitations. We all know the fact that they never won. They haven't won a game away from Quito in the qualifications. And that they're a team that has made the most of the peculiar circumstances of, you know, the fact they play at altitude and so forth. And that they're not necessarily one of the top four teams in South America in neutral. In a neutral environment. On the other hand, I thought they gave a decent account of themselves tonight. They struggled at the beginning of the game when they were put under pressure, but they came back into it, reacted extremely well, I think, to the sending off of Valencia, and in many ways actually had the better chances in the second half. Well, apart from the Pogba chance, of course, the header, but they had some very decent chances. So I think it's a little bit being a little bit harsh, perhaps, on Ecuador and on the manager.
Yeah, Barry. Anyway, that's great, Philippe. So through you go. Nigeria awaits. That's super. We look forward to catching up with you again soon, mon vieux ami.
So do I. It's not going to be as easy a game as perhaps people are making it in France. I think people are underestimating Nigeria. Well, judging by what I've heard before the game, perhaps people will have changed their opinion slightly after seeing Nigeria against Argentina. But, you know, there's this French team is a team that I think will be extremely dangerous in 2016. I don't think it has quite got what it needs to go the whole way in 2014 in Brazil. But, all right. I hope I'm wrong. Perhaps I'm just being Le Chat Noir, the black cat, who is trying to jinx the team. So it's a double hex and we win it in the end.
Oh, that's fiendishly clever stuff, Philippe. We're going to go away and think about that. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Right, that was Philippe Auclair. There's one other game we've still got to talk about from Wednesday, Honduras-Switzerland. Dermich and Shaqiri look quite the pair, don't they, James?
They do. I think Drumic's movement tonight was excellent. He didn't score, but he contributed two assists. And Shaqiri, you know, had a great match himself. Scored a hat-trick, of course, second of the tournament so far for Thomas Müller. Both of them play for Bayern Munich. Shaqiri's had a sort of indifferent season for them. Yeah, he's been in and out with injury. I think he's had three separate muscle injuries. I actually saw him in the Nike store in London
at Did
one
you?
Stage towards the end of the season whilst he was recovering. Oh. But he apparently returned for the final fortnight of the season in the Bundesliga. And
was it a promotional appearance he was
it
doing?
It wasn't. Though? No, I was going to get some running shoes and he was just there.
No, not for you. I meant for him.
No, he was in there with someone and people just coming up to him and you know,
that's because of this stunning lack of imagination many footballers have. He's recovering from injury, comes to London. Where does he go? The Nike store.
But you'd have thought, as a professional athlete, that he could whistle and be furnished with pretty much any bit of sporting gear he wanted.
Well, maybe he'd finished the promotional thing before. I don't know.
Perhaps.
But he was upstairs and he was quite willing to give lots and lots of, you know, photographs and stuff to people coming his way. He's a very small guy, very short and stubby. But you know, he's got that low centre of gravity, I guess.
Absolutely.
I'll see your Jordan Shaqiri and raise you Thomas Hitzelsberger standing outside Clapham North Tube Station.
All right.
With a suitcase.
I'll see you. Who did you just say?
Thomas Hitzelsberger.
Oh yeah, there you go. Him. And raise you Hidetoshi Nakata.
Oh really? Well,
I was once trying on a suit in a London suitery, and who should have been in the little kind of curtained enclave next to me but self-same Japanese icon.
Yeah. He's a huge fashionista.
He's very fashionable. It was a very fashionable store. Quite intimidatingly so.
How much are you getting paid?
No, this was back in the day.
Ah, right.
Yeah. I had a TV gig in those days. Yeah.
So Shaqiri, yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah, him. Anyway, so Switzerland, and they go through.
Yeah, they bounce back from that, 5-2 defeat to France really quite well.
Well, I think that scoreline, that was a tough scoreline on them, wasn't it? They're going to be playing Argentina, though. What do you think about that?
Well,
are you one of those people, James? You're about to answer. We'll find out for ourselves. But I wonder if you're going to be one of those people who thinks that Argentina have actually flattered to deceive a little bit because they've not played anybody. I mean, anybody yet.
They haven't, and they haven't really played well consistently. They have done in patches. Their defence continues to underwhelm. I think, you know, Nigeria's performance today will again give sort of encouragement to Switzerland that they can do some damage. But Messi apart, really. I mean, even up front, I thought Higuain and Aguero didn't combine particularly well. Aguero went off with a muscle injury. He's going to have a scan, I think, tomorrow. And if anything, they found sort of more balance in going forward when Lavezzi came on, and Higuain did better when Messi went off. So finding the right balance still, I think, for Sabella, even though those three did really well for him in qualifying.
Were Honduras dirty today?
Reasonably so, yeah. Well, they took to studying each other, actually, didn't they, at one point?
All right.
I mean, talking about airplanes with Ghana, you could imagine a flight back with Honduras would be like Con Air, wouldn't it? Nicolas Cage and, you know.
Yeah, I remember the film.
Good film. Mm.
Did you like it?
I thoroughly enjoyed Con Air. Really? I'd say I've seen Con Air about 5 times.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so Honduras go home, conceivably in, you know, some kind of giant transport, chained, manacled to the bare fuselage.
Uh-huh. And one of them would be sucking on a paperclip, waiting to unshackle everyone. And then all hell break loose.
What would you rather watch, that or the last 16? I'm not sure. It's been a great World Cup, but I'm just wondering, if you were offered a choice of viewing now, Honduras on their trip back in the C-130 transport with paperclips, or Switzerland, Argentina, I thought that would be tough. You'd have to have your laptop open and you know, one on... Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so Switzerland goes through, they're going to be taking on Argentina. We'll preview that when the time comes, and come it will. Couple of little stories going on. There's been a lot of kerfuffle, of course, over Italy and who's going to be their new manager. All sorts of scary names being linked to it. James, you still remain of the opinion that Prandelli's going to recant and reclaim his place with Azzurri?
I'm not sure about that. The vice president of the Football Federation in Italy, Dimitri Albertini, was saying that they will try and persuade Prandelli to stay. Remember, he renewed his contract before this tournament began until 2016. The issue they have is that the president resigned as well yesterday, and a new one will not be elected until the qualifiers begin in September. So, and obviously the new one will be picking the new coach. So right. It's in their interest for him to stay. And also the other candidates are kind of underwhelming.
Underwhelming. But there is a new candidate with his hat in the ring, and that's Zaccaroni, who's just resigned as Japan manager. Huh. How about that?
There was also a suggestion on ITV that smiling... pundit Fabio Cannavaro might be in line for the job, and he said he's ready for it.
Thank God he was on that show and not, say, Robbie Savage, otherwise Italy could really find themselves in trouble. Also in Italian managerial news, Clarence Seedorf to Inter's the hot rumour. That'd be funny. Or not, perhaps that wouldn't be of any interest to anyone at all. But there you go. Do enjoy what they're doing in Uruguay vis-a-vis the Suarez biting incident, where wall-to-wall coverage seems to be suggesting the existence of a global conspiracy to defame son of Uruguay, Luis Suarez.
That seems to be an ongoing theme among supporters of teams that Luis Suarez plays for, just this huge global conspiracy against their player. I think he is going to get punished very severely. I'm not necessarily sure that's entirely fair, but, you know, don't buy people, it won't happen.
Well, there you go. Good advice there from Barry. A report on Uruguayan TV said that Suarez's face made contact with Chiellini's shoulder, but only became an issue about biting when British reporters repeatedly asked questions in the post-match press conference. The report adding Jeff Hurt's second goal in the 1966 final did not cross the line. So have some of that, pesky reporters. Anyway, a little music or announcement, and then we're on to Thursday.
So this is the bit of the podcast you can skip or hum loudly over my voice until I stop talking. We've got a brand new Guardian Football channel on YouTube, which is home to all kinds of original video content, including a daily news show out every lunchtime, filling you in on all the best and funniest press and social media reaction to the night before, as well as previews of all the big games with a range of special guests. Check out youtube.com/Guardian Football.
Thanks, Nat. Now, Thursday, we've got Group G and the Group Too Far, as I think they're now calling it, Group H, with the assembled delights of Belgium, Algeria, Russia and South Korea. Well, Algeria taking on Russia, James. Algeria became the first African side to score 4 goals in a World Cup game, mm-hmm. in that amazing match against South Korea. And that's now put them in line for a place in the last 16 for the first time ever.
Ever?
Ever.
Yeah. Could join Nigeria there. And obviously Ghana could still make it. So you'd have 3 African sides in the round of 16, which I don't think is ever happened before.
All the teams have a chance, though, because Russia still have a chance as well. The group reads like this: Belgium on 6 points, Algeria on 3 points, and then Russia and South Korea on 1 point. And South Korea will be taking on Belgium in the final match. What do you think about Algeria's chances of making it then?
Well, I mean, Algeria thwarted a Capello side 4 years ago.
They did.
In his England. And the pressure is on him because they obviously disappointed in their first game. They drew. Akinfeev made a Rob Green-like howler. And then in the second game against Belgium, they lost. They felt aggrieved by that. They felt that they should have had a penalty in that. The goal came, Belgium's winning goal, which was their only shot in target, I think in the 88th minute, came after a foul on a Russian player. But, you know, Capello being the highest paid manager by quite some distance in this World Cup and one contracted to Russia until 2018, you know, it's not looking too good going into this. So I wouldn't be surprised, considering how well Algeria played, perversely in the first half, that they could pull a shock on Russia.
Right.
Well, it wouldn't be a shock. They've been one of the best teams so far, I think.
Yeah, a draw will almost certainly do Algeria. And Russia have been really negative. Well, it's not much of a surprise because Capello's their manager, but even by his standards, they've been fairly negative. They have to win, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes about. You know, will he have a very cautious approach, or will he sort of be a bit more adventurous?
Asterisk, it may not be actually interesting, but yeah.
Okay, yeah.
No, yeah, it might be. I think a lot of people will be rooting for Algeria. They are 2 points ahead of Russia and South Korea, but with a favourable goal difference as well. So, as you say, a draw should be enough. And then if they do go through, the likelihood is they would be facing Germany in the next round, the team that they beat famously back in 1982 and then got diddled for a knockout stage place by. Yeah. All right, South Korea, Belgium's the other game there. Is it, opinion from the Benefit boys who were in yesterday was that Belgium have underwhelmed so far, but wait till the knockout stages, which they look pretty certain to go to. In fact, they'll definitely
They've qualified.
Wait till the knockout stages, and when they play, in the words of Mikhail, some proper teams, then they'll really, that's when their game will come alive. We'll see.
Define proper teams.
Well, he seems to think that because these opponents that they've had, the likes of Algeria and Russia so far, have sat back and not come onto them, that hasn't enabled them to express and, I guess, hit them on the break. I suppose he means hit them on the break. I don't know. Hmm. Well, we'll see. Anyway, that's what Mikhail says. That's Group H. Anyway, but Group G has Germany and USA tied on 4 points. Germany with a much better goal difference. Well, 3 better. And then Ghana on 1 point and Portugal only on 1 point with a horrific -4 goal difference. So your final group game matches are Portugal against Ghana. They'll slug it out, but they're at the mercy of a match 1,200 miles away in Recife, where USA and Germany are taking each other on in this incredible master and apprentice matchup that's got a lot of people scratching their chins and raising an eyebrow over the possibility of the two sides just settling for a point apiece, which would see them both go through. Raphael Honigstein joins us now to discuss that very possibility and more.
If they won't set out to draw the game, Germany has very little to lose. If you look at the dynamics of the group, they would have to lose quite heavily, with either Portugal and Ghana also winning by a huge margin. So they can really more or less go for it with impunity. Of course, if the game is tied with 20 minutes to go, will they start throwing on lots of forwards to decide the game? Probably not. Be the same thing that you'd see in a similar situation in a league game where both teams are happy with a draw. That's why the draw, I think, has come in as far as the international betting markets are concerned. It is the most obvious outcome. At the same time, I think Klinsmann would love to show first of all, the USA, of course, who employ him, but by extension, also Germany, that he can out-coach and out-smart Löw, because he has this reputation going back from 2006 as a great motivator, somebody gets everybody very excited. But all the tactical details, of course, were done by Löw, and he's never really been able to shake that off, certainly not within Germany. So I think he'd love to prove a point and show that he's evolved and developed as a coach as well.
Mm. Thursday morning's Bild certainly taking a bullish stance on this. They got a picture of Klinsmann with a black eye and a really banged up face, and the headline, Klinsy, you'll see stars. Is there an element of wishing to dish a bit of a lesson out to the renegade German?
I don't think so. I think this is just them playing games.
All right.
If Löw gets beaten, then you'll see Löw being punched up the right. next day. There's no great animosity towards him, and why would there be? He's still seen as the father of this current German team, in the sense of introducing all the reforms, all the revolutions that have paid off down the line. And I think more and more people who perhaps were in the beginning critical of his methods have come to understand that he got almost everything right, from promoting youngsters to promoting a new kind of goalkeeping with Lehmann over Kahn, to introducing much more professional methods in and around the team. In the Bundesliga, people laughed at him, people thought he was crazy, and now a lot of stuff that he did then with American specialists has become standard practice. And I think German football on a whole has begun to realize just how much of a debt they owe to him. And the dynamic now is a different one to a couple of years ago, when he very much came back as damaged goods from his stint at Bayern, because it clearly didn't work out. And I think at that time he was also a little bit out of his depth.
Okay. Jogi Löw, is he going to rest a whole bunch of players? Is Schweinsteiger coming back into the picture? What do you think about the 11?
Yeah, well, Schweinsteiger for Khedira is one muted move. For two reasons. Khedira isn't fully fit. He also struggled. And Schweinsteiger could do with the whole 90 minutes. But I still sense that he will not try to make too many changes initially. Start with more or less the same starting 11. Up front in the three, I think there's one place up for grabs next to Özil and Müller. But otherwise, with Boateng recovering from his fitness, I think you'll see, in my view, you'll see the same team. If everything goes to plan, and the other game also, you know, pans out in a way that poses no danger to this Germany side, then I think in the second half he'll make lots of changes.
Raphael Honigstein there in Rio de Janeiro. It's a huge game, this, for the Americans. The last game, the Portugal game, that drew 18 million people for ESPN, which is more than the average for their NFL games. And the Stanley Cup finals, I think, were averaging 5 million. So three times what they were getting for the closing series of the ice hockey season, according to the figures that I read on the internet, which you've probably seen as well. But it's huge. Even Hulk Hogan's tweeting about the US
Hulkamania.
MNT. There you go.
Yeah.
What you going to do, Germany, when the USA runs wild all over you? I'm adopting my Hulk Hogan voice here. Brother USA soccer, let's do it. With 5 exclamation marks, HH. It's an interesting game, though.
I mean, there's 5 German-Americans. Well,
that's Hulk Hogan. Can I just stress that's Hulk Hogan, not... Oh, dear. Yeah.
Your Hulk Hogan impersonation isn't very good.
Well, I've never seen him speak, really. Right. Is that not... Go on, you give us one then, Barry.
I couldn't even begin. Well, he's clearly trash-talking the Germans, and when wrestlers trash-talk, they do so very loudly and aggressively.
That's what I was doing.
Oh, right, sorry. I didn't realise that was you being loud and aggressive.
I was smouldering, I thought.
There's a great
quiet
vine
menace
of Balotelli's foul yesterday, which got a yellow card, which is kind of just rash, kind of. He jumped and they made it, I think they photoshopped him, so he's coming from the top rope like a wrestler coming down.
Right.
And so on. It's quite good.
It was extraordinary elevation he got on that foul. Yeah. I mean, he basically kneed him in the head with the fellow standing up. It's not easy. Anyway, there's all sorts of intriguing angles about this, not only the Jogi Löw Klinsmann thing, the fact that no less than 5 of the American side were actually born in Germany, am I right?
Yeah,
there you go. And well, USA, they were missing Jose Altidore, weren't they? I'm not sure how you felt about Altidore's contribution to Sunderland's season, but USA seemed to be missing his presence there against Portugal.
Yeah, I don't really know what he does. I mean,
he's the big man up front. He holds the ball up.
But he doesn't hold the ball up.
Does he not?
And he doesn't score. Well, not for Sunderland,
anyway. Does
he ask
questions?
But he's apparently doing very well for USA in this World Cup. Or did in the first game, anyway. And good luck to him, because he seems like a very nice guy. I just don't rate him as a footballer. Mm. And that's on the evidence of what I've seen of him at Sunderland, where he doesn't hold the ball up, he doesn't score, and I don't really know what the reason is for having him there.
Right, okay. Well, he's not going to be in this game either. Michael Bradley, with an absolute shocker at the end there, with the USA already qualified for the knockout stages, and, well, it can happen to anyone, I suppose. But that was very unlike him, wasn't it, James?
What happened?
Yeah, exactly. It was an amazing finish against Portugal, and let's hope it's every bit as exciting against Germany. Portugal, meanwhile, I mentioned back at the start, they're playing Ghana. Ronaldo, not heard any updates about his knee and the tendinosis. I don't know if anyone's got anything on that.
Nope. No, I haven't heard anything either.
Pepe's back.
Is he back?
Isn't he back? I think he's back from his suspension. Pretty sure he's back from a one-game suspension.
Well, I was looking somewhere today, and I saw that they had him down as being suspended for this game, but
perhaps he's not.
I thought surely he's back at one match ban, unless they gave him two because it was violent conduct or something. I don't know.
Oh well, but, still no coin trial.
Yeah, but the good news for Portugal is that Sully Montari is out for Ghana. He's suspended and will be a big loss on the evidence of the game I saw them play last time around when they drew with
Germany.
He was excellent.
Sullivan Tye, a valuable source of balls in midfield, but usually the opposition, certainly on the basis of his club football. But yeah, and Asamoah Gyan is on fire, and yeah, what do you think? Portugal it is dependent on what happens in Recife. Who do you see in this one, Portugal or Ghana?
Well, I think Germany will beat USA
right.
And knock them out. And
Ghana?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't been impressed with Portugal at all.
We're probably just an average team. I'd be lying if I said we were a top team, says Cristiano Ronaldo.
I think he's right.
Hmm?
Yeah,
there you go.
I think Paulo Bento, the coach, is quite an unexpiring character. Yeah, unlike a number of his colleagues in this tournament, Prandelli, Lamucci, Zaccheroni, he announced today he won't resign even if they're eliminated. Which, you know, considering I think they've for the last couple of major tournaments they've qualified only through the playoffs and they make quite a difficult job of it. I'm surprised he will stay on. But I guess, you know, if you've got a contract and you're going to get paid.
I heard that. All right, so we think Germany and Ghana to go through from Group G, and Belgium and Algeria are from that group, Group H. Super. And we're going to find out on Thursday. Hopefully you'll join us straight afterwards for World Cup Football Daily, where we'll be reviewing all of that and looking forward to a day off on Friday, and B, the start of the last 16 on Saturday. Ooh, that's exciting then. Make sure you join us for the next edition. For now, though, from myself, James Horncastle, and Barry Glendinning, and producer Ben, it's goodbye.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. With World Cup fever taking over, we at The Guardian are pretty sure that you're thinking big too. So maybe now is the time to use Squarespace to create your own professional website for your small business, portfolio or blog. It's easy. You could create your own site during halftime. Just go to squarespace.com to start your free trial. And to support this podcast, use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.